The question was asked, if they were telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim till the morning, what about midnight? So what he's really asking is that we know you have to finish the Paschal offering by midnight. By the same token, we should finish our Afikoman by midnight. The Afikoman commemorates the Paschal offering. By the same token, we should really finish the four cups by midnight. At least according to some opinions. We should really then conclude the story by midnight. So, we said that kol hamarbeh hareza meshubach. If your mitzvah is till midnight, what does it mean? Whoever does more is praiseworthy. So some suggest that that's why they kept going, because that's called marbeh. That's called doing more. When you love a mitzvah, you don't stop. So really, we have a machloket whether your mitzvah is till the morning or not, with recounting the story of the Exodus. Does the mitzvah end at midnight or not? But they kept going even past the morning. They kept going till the time of Shema. So they fulfilled according to all opinions. They were marbe. That's why we said to do more. The mitzvah, according to one opinion, is till midnight. Right. But that's why they kept going. Because it says the more you do, the more praiseworthy it is. Up till midnight is what you should be doing. Past midnight is called you're doing more. That's marbe. That's one answer. Yes?
That tie that you made. Shirt thingy, the white thing that you're wearing, is that any knot, or is that just a
I just did a double knot. I happen to have done a slip knot just to make it easy to open it. But being that I'm going to still open it today, that's okay. Yeah. I do a slip knot like on your shoe. Yeah, same type of knot you do on your shoe. Yeah.
To finish that question, it's possible to finish the story, the central point of the story, till midnight, and after that to continue.
For sure, that's what we usually do. That's usually what we do. We finish the main part of Maggid by midnight, we finish the Hallel and the meal and the Hallel, and then we come back and expand on the story. Yeah, for sure, that's what we do. Okay, I recommend, by the way, you guys should have an interesting Haggadah, because sometimes your host is going to spend an hour doing Manishtana with every child in every language. Do it in Spanish, do it in Yiddish, do it in French, do it in, and every kid gets to show off how he knows how to do it. And what are you going to do during that time? If you have an interesting Haggadah, you could sit and learn. Okay. Yeah. Now we're going to put, we're going to push on the gas because we still have to get to how you do the whole Seder, the actual meal and everything else. Gentlemen, stay focused. We're going to talk quickly now. Let's go. The Egyptians did evil to us. The verse says, let us deal with them wisely. That's what we discussed. The Egyptians were worried. If there'll be a war, we'll turn against them. We weren't threatening them, but they were worried, and so they started demonizing us. It says they afflicted us, as it says. They had officers whose sole job it was break the Jewish spirit. Their focus was to oppress them, to break them in suffering. And so the Jews built these treasure cities for Pharaoh. At Pitom Ramses, Pitom was built over quicksand, so it kept getting absorbed. They'd come and work hard all day. People would be swallowed into the quicksand. Everything they built would be swallowed in the quicksand, and then tomorrow they'd have to start all over again. And then Ramses was on a fault line where there were constant tremors, and everything they built would fall and collapse, and obviously people were maimed. It says when we left Egypt, the average Jew was missing at least an eye or an arm or a leg. The Jews were maimed. The Jews were leaving Egypt mortally wounded. I don't know about mortally, but wounded. They imposed the hard labor upon us. The verse says, you know what it means? The Egyptian would come and say, start digging. And the Jew would say, how long? And the Egyptian would say, keep digging. I'll tell you when to stop. And then walk off. And the Jew would never know when he'd come back. He could come back in an hour, in a day, in 3 days. You don't know. You just got to keep digging. And then the Egyptian would come back, let's say 12 hours later, 16 hours later, the Jew had been digging and digging and digging, and the Egyptian says, ooh, nice pit you dug. Now put all that sand back. Now that's the most backbreaking. You're working all day, and it's pointless. That's called avodas parech. Vanitah. El Adonai Elohei Avoteinu. We cried out to Hashem, the God of our fathers. Sometimes a person doesn't feel like it's his God even, but it's his father's God. He doesn't have a connection, but he knows from his father. Vayishma Adonai et koleinu, vayat onyenu et amaleinu et lachatzeinu. God so heard our cry, saw our afflictions, our burdens, and our oppression. And now we're going to break down the words in this verse, analyze each one. We said, Vanitzak El Adonai Elohei Avoteinu. We cried out to Hashem, the God of our fathers, Kmo Shnoa, as the verse says. Those many days passed and the Egyptian king died. Our tradition says he didn't die. He had leprosy and he started slaughtering over 100 Jewish children a day to bathe in their blood. The doctors told him that's how you'll get cured. The children of Israel groaned because of the servitude. They cried. Their cry rose to Hashem because of their servitude. The verse says, God heard our cry. The verse says, what did God hear? There was a couple. They were standing in the mortar. And here we have this custom later on in the Agada. If you could pass me, here we have the charoses. I could have the fork, please, from the charoses and the grape juice. Just the fork and the grape juice. So you see, this is to commemorate the mortar. The hardest work was the mortar. So the Jews were standing in the mortar, and the mortar had the hay inside that was mixed into the mortar. And they would have to stand squashing down, making the mortar with their bare feet. And the hay would puncture the soles of their feet, and there was blood swirling in the mortar, their blood. And so we put in a little bit of thick red wine to commemorate that. Unless, of course, you live in a country where there are blood libels, you don't do this. You don't want stains of red wine on the tablecloth. So that's why those countries would adopt white wine. They shouldn't come with all kinds of libels. And then we pour the red wine over it and we say, you see this? Here they were standing on the mortar and their blood was swirling in the mortar. And then there was a couple. The Midrash tells us the name. I forgot the name, from the tribe of Dan. They had their own child. The Egyptian said to them, you're not making enough bricks, you're not making enough mortar. And they threw their child into the mortar. And there they were being whipped. They couldn't walk out of the mortar. And as they're walking on the mortar, they see the blood of their own son swirling between their feet. And it was their cry. We commemorate this. We commemorate the mortar because it was the hardest work. We commemorate the mortar, the Midrash says, because it was their cry. That couple standing there as they felt their own baby's blood swirling between their toes. It was that cry that we're talking about here, that God heard our cry. Vayishma Hashem et koleinu. God heard our cry. Vayizkor Elokim b'ritot Avraham, Yitzchak v'Yaakov. God remembered His covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Yaakov. Vayara et onyenu. God saw our afflictions. Zot rishut derech eretz. People left their wives. A woman would say, honey, when are you coming home tonight? And the husband would say, I'm not. This is too hard. What are we bringing kids for? Look at how they're dying. And the wife would come out to the field, even though she was doing labor that was more physically taxing than the husband. Women don't break as quickly as men. And so the woman would come out to the field, and her husband would be sitting under a citron tree, and he wouldn't have strength to move. And she'd come and bring some water and smear his back and say, it's going to be okay. We're going to be okay. And they'd bring out mirrors and they'd sit next to their husband and say, look at us. They didn't have little pictures, right? They'd have these little mirrors. She'd put her arm around them and say, look, look at us. And the husband wouldn't want to look. And she'd say, look, who's cuter, you or me? Come on, look in the mirror. And then they'd go out and they'd draw water. They'd make a little fire. And they draw water and they'd have these little fish in the water. Now the little fish, the Talmud tells us, little fish are very good for procreation, for having a lot of kids. So they'd cook the water with these little fish and they'd try to encourage their husbands. And finally, when she could get an arousal out of him, she'd push him, she'd come and drag him with her, playing with him, arousing him, as the verse in the Song of Songs says, Tachat ha-tapuach o-harticha, under the esrog trees I aroused you. And they'd draw them out to the fields. The husband didn't want to be intimate with their wives in public. So whenever you plow a field, at the end of each field, you'd have a mound of dirt. Because as you're plowing, you're bringing along the dirt with you. So at the end of two fields, you'd always have this little enclave between the two mounds of dirt where one field ends and the other field ends. And that's where they'd lie and be intimate. So it reached a point where the husband said, no, I can't. It's over. Come on. We're finished. We're done for. I don't have strength. Vayaret onyenu, God saw our afflictions, zoprishut der heretz, that people stopped having children. They stopped being intimate with their wives. As the verse says, Kmo shenemar, ve'yar Elokim b'nei Yisrael, God looked at the Jewish people, v'yede Elokim, God knew. What does it mean, God knew? It means God knew what no one else knew, what was going on in the bedroom. God knew that they were no longer together. Ve'et amaleinu, God saw our burden, elu abanim. Those are the children, Kmo shenemar, as the verse says, kol ben ha'ilot ha'yorot ha'shichuv chol abat techayun. They said, oh boys, get thrown into the Nile. Could you imagine what that means? A parent carries a child 9 months, finally has a child, deals with the child, and in comes an Egyptian, grabs the child mercilessly and takes him out, throws him into the Nile. And the parent can't do anything. And they know that their daughters are being kept for mass prostitution. The whole reason they're leaving the daughters behind is because they have a plan. Ve'tamaleinu, that was the burden. Meaning there's the affliction, the physical affliction. There's the fact that they saw no reason to have children anymore. And then there's the burden. What's the burden? Children. What's the burden in children? The burden is knowing that they're going to lose those children. It says they would try to take the children out into the fields. They would try to build little caves under the fields to hide the children in. And the Egyptians would come on to them and they'd bring plows to plow the Jewish babies. To try and find any place in the field there was a Jewish baby, they would plow over them to try and kill any Jewish baby that might survive. Ve'et lachatzeinu, our oppression, zodachak. That's the pressure. Pressure, pressure. The worst thing after everything you have to deal with is when you're pressured. They say, come on now. Now, you're ready. Now, why aren't you done yet? They pick up the stick and they beat him. Now, everything else you could deal with, barely. But pressure is something that drives a person out of his mind. Pressure, pressure, pressure. The verse says, I've seen how the Egyptians are oppressing them. So the final straw was the pressure. Tells us something about life. What pressure does to a person. Now we go on to the next verse, which again we will analyze. The verse says, God took us out of Egypt with a mighty hand, with an outstretched arm, with great awe, signs and wonders. And here it's important to note, we didn't run out like runaway slaves. God Himself took us out of Egypt. He didn't send any angel. He didn't send a seraph angel. Nor through a messenger. Some over here have the word ha-saraf. And here there's a nice word. They say that's an allusion to Moshe. Right? Because it says malach, saraf, ha-shaliach. The acronym is malach, mem, saraf, sin, ha-shaliach, hey, Moshe. Because Moshe is not mentioned in the Agoda. Tonight we speak about our intimate connection with Hashem. He took us out tonight. Tonight was special. So we don't mention Moshe. Ela kadosh baruch hu v'chvodo v'atzmo, God Himself. There are those that have the custom, they stand up when they mention God's name. Shnemar, the verse says, God says, I personally will pass through Egypt. I will hit the firstborn human and animals and destroy, punish the Egyptian gods. I am Hashem. Okay, now the Medrash will analyze each word of the pasuk. God Himself passes through Egypt, no angels. What's God doing when He passes through Egypt? So here there are two beautiful ideas. Number one, the Medrash says, as God passes through Egypt, He's calling out, Beni Bechori Israel, my chosen child is Israel. They're mine. What are you messing with my kid for? It's my child you've been hurting. And so that's the heavenly voice that rings through Egypt as God kills the firstborn Egyptians. Okay, there's another idea, maybe during the meal. Yeah?
I know Moshe isn't mentioned in the Haggadah, and you mentioned that, you know, God's taking us out without a messenger and everything, but for the most part, Moshe was leading the Jews. In a sense, why couldn't, you know, the plagues, you know, God come to Pharaoh in a dream and the plagues start without Moshe?
That's a great question, If it were the Seder night, I'd have to take the time to deal with it. Being that it's a model Seder and the time is late and people are tired, let's leave it for the meal. Remind me, we'll get back to it while we're eating, okay? Even on the real Seder, I might tell you that. Because even at the real Seder, you got to factor everyone else in. Okay, now I'm going to fly for real. God says, I will hit the firstborn in Egypt. I, God, is saying, I will do it, not a seraph angel. I'll punish the gods of Egypt. No messenger. God says, it is I, none other. Page, you guys have it? What page are we on? 35. Okay. It says, God took us out of Egypt, Beyad Chazakah, we're three paragraphs from the bottom. Zodever, that's a pestilence. Here, God's getting involved, animals are dropping dead, and we quote a verse that supports that. I'm skipping to the next paragraph. God took us out with an outstretched arm. Zocheref, that's God's sword that was outstretched, and we show a verse that illustrates that. We say God took us out of Egypt with great awe. That's the revelation of the Shekhinah in Egypt. And again, we quote a pasuk to support that. Uve otot, with great signs. Those are the miracles we did that were done with the staff, and we bring a pasuk to support that. Uve moftim, and with wonders. That's referring to the blood. Zadam. And as the verse says, I'll make wondrous things in heaven and on earth. And here, where we quote the three components of that, of the wonders, we take out three drops of blood from our, three drops of grape juice from our cup. Dam va'esh v'timrot ashan. You could actually suck that, but the idea of taking out from the wine is we're about to enumerate how the Egyptians suffered, and so we're taking off from our wine to show we're not celebrating their suffering. Tonight we're celebrating that we made it out free. Our celebration is not over their suffering. Okay. This was all a reference to the 10 plagues that God brought on the Egyptians in Egypt. And now we're going to describe the 10 plagues. And again, with each plague, we take a drop of wine out of our cup to show how we're remorseful that they had to suffer. We're celebrating we got out, but we're taking out a drop of our wine to show this idea. We're not celebrating their suffering.
Weren't supposed to hate Egyptians?
No. The verse says, do not, for you were a sojourner in their land. Dam, we take out one drop. Tzifaldea, another one. Kinim, vermin. Lice, arov, wild beasts. Dever, pestilence. Shrin, boils. Barad, hail mixed with fire. Arbel, locusts. Choshech, darkness. Makat, bechorot. The plague of the firstborn. Rabbi Yudayan, ten mem simanim. Rabbi Yudah would abbreviate them in their Hebrew initials. And again, we take out three drops for each initial. Ditzach, adash, beachav. If people don't like sticking their finger in, they could pour out a drop each time. And now, we go through three long paragraphs that describe how the Egyptians suffered more by the sea than they did in Egypt. And we prove it from verses. We're going to skip it tonight. At the Seder, you can just read through it quickly. In my Seder, I read through it quickly and explain it, but really quickly, because it's really long. We just describe how they suffered more by the sea, which is an illustration of how wicked they were. Because here they were chasing us. They see the sea splits on our behalf. And that night, they're getting a replay of the 10 plagues, only five times as harsh. Think about it. All their water turns to blood all over again. It's like a reminder. You're starting up with them. Look at what I can do to you. And they still followed us into the sea. And then the sea came crashing down on them. Okay. Kama ma'alot tovot lamakom ma'aleh.